Hey, welcome back to the Infest Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Daryl.
And this is episode 428, Fists and Bombs Are Flying.
I thought you were going to say Fists of Fury or something.
Well, I could have used Fists of Fury, but that's a movie and we're not reviewing that movie. Even though Bruce Lee is awesome.
Fisting Fury.
Fisting Fury is another movie that we don't cover that kind of topic, Daryl. I don't know what you do in your personal life. But you know, you do you, pal, you do you. Anyway, so we're back this week. We are talking about the Amazon Prime original Roadhouse episodes 5 and 6 of Shogun. And we're going to review the entire miniseries of Masters of the Air on Apple TV. Daryl, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I am well.
This.
It's a nice, we're recording on CZAD. Other people might call it Easter. But I call it Christian Zombie Appreciation Day. So, you know, there we go.
I was going to say it's a lovely day, but it's kind of overcast. I
it's
know there
nice
were thunderstorms
up here.
Last night.
Our rain is come and gone. So it's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's, I don't think it's going to rain anymore, but it's just yeah. overcast day. Yeah.
It's like 60 degrees
might take
out.
A walk later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Have the windows open.
Yeah, nice. I got out on the bike yesterday, so it was fun. But yeah. All right. So before we get started, some sad news. One of our favorites from Gen Z, Chance Prodromo, unfortunately passed away this weekend in a motorcycle accident. He was 27 years old. He played Andre Anderson in Gen V, so he was the one with like kind of the Magneto type powers with the magnetism. And he also played Ambrose Spellman on the Chilling Adventures
yeah, I remember.
Sabrina.
Yeah.
So, which I did not watch any of. So there is that.
Yeah. I watched a couple seasons and then it just kind of figuratively and literally went to hell and it just kind of sucked.
Yeah.
It went from being fun to, okay, this is dumb now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I actually liked his character in that, and you know, I was a fan of his character in Gen V. Those are the only two things I've seen him in. It also says he was in these After Ever Happy and After Everything, these trilogy, and he was in two of the three trilogy of movies about whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is fanfic that turned into a movie, you know, like the 50 Shades or whatever, but yeah, it's sad, you know. It's
yeah, I mean, this is sad, like anytime, like he was just starting to get like super popular and you know he's on a great show. Yeah. He's a great part of a great show.
Sadly reminds me a little similar because it was a vehicle, but Anton Yelchin when he
yeah
because he was around the same age,
27,
when
yeah.
he died. Back
that was even worse. But it was sadder because like he got pinned by a random car, or it might have been his car. I don't know, but he was pinned up against a mailbox for hours and died. I imagine a lot of the Gen V cast are going to get updates to their insurance if they want to continue to have a job. They're not to. To ride a motorcycle.
Yeah. And again, this was one of those things that we saw literally right. Probably maybe I sent you 10 minutes before we logged on.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it until like I saw it maybe 2 minutes before I sent it to you. So
yeah. So I mean,
it's
this
just something new and
this Hollywood Reporter article I'm looking at it is from 10:30 this morning. So it's 3:05 right now. Yeah, it's super sad. And like I said, he was a character we both really liked. He was a really well done character with the like what are his motivations? What is he doing? So I'm curious how much season 2 has been shot, if any, and if he'll be in it. Cause it didn't seem to say, here in the article.
Yeah. And on IMDb, it just has him as upcoming in something called Batman, which is in post-production.
Okay. Well, that means you know, hopefully they don't have to do a bunch of reshoots, for that. And at least he'll have something. We'll be able to see him in something else.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, that's sad. In good news, Invincible recast D.A. Sinclair, got rid of Ezra Miller and gave a new voice actor. So there's good news out there.
So is Ezra just going to go away now?
I hope so. I hope he goes away.
Yes. Oh, I just looked up Gen V season 2 production and says, in light of Prodromo's passing, start of season 2 production has been delayed indefinitely.
Oh. Okay. Let's not like not do the show, but yeah, I mean, definitely like, sure. I don't know. Here's the thing though. I don't think you can recast him. Like, it's just one of those things where maybe you can. I don't know. He had a like, you know, the what do the kids say nowadays? He had a vibe to him that was like pretty cool. You know, now again, like we argued that they needed to recast Chadwick Boseman, like, you know, immediately. So whatever.
The thing is, I think you can recast
you can.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously. That you can, but certain recastings are, and again, sometimes it's because of contracts, sometimes it's because of, you know, passing, sometimes because of somebody just acts stupid that there has been recasting throughout, you know, history of cinema.
Yeah, but look at
every recasting is not the same,
right?
So
yeah, like Rhodey Rhodes, better, for example,
some are worse.
You know that we got a much worse recasting with Don Cheadle.
Hard disagree with that.
I like Terrence.
So. I love you know, Terrence Howard as an actor, but I just did not.
I thought Terrence Howard was a much better Rhodey in what little we got from him, and I would love to see him in the suit. But I also think Don Cheadle comes across as like super whiny now in everything that he does. So starting with Rhodey, but yeah. Anyway. So
well,
yeah,
that's because he was a Skrull. But anyway,
well, was he though? that's going to be the big MacGuffin, right?
No, I don't even want to think about that anymore. Yeah. So
I hear you.
The fact that I watched 3 episodes.
Yeah, you did it, so I didn't have to. So I really appreciate that.
Ugh.
All right. Well, on that note, Chance Prodromo, RIP, dude. You were a solid part of a show we love, and we will definitely miss seeing what you were going to do in your career, because from everything I saw, you were a good actor and I liked you. So
yeah,
I don't know what kind of person he was, but you know, that's really not up for me to decide either. So
at least I can say he wasn't in the news for doing stupid shit.
Yeah. He wasn't in the news for kidnapping a 13-year-old girl or a family and taking them to a farm in Vermont.
Yeah, or throwing chairs at people while they're on stage.
Choke slamming women in Iceland.
Yeah.
All right. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. So, Roadhouse. We have very different views on this movie.
This is true.
We have very, very different views on Roadhouse, which I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, I will say, Roadhouse is objectively a bad movie.
Yes. To be honest, just like the original.
Yeah. But it never comes back around to being a good movie, which is part of the problem. What?
No, I'm just thinking of some of the I can't get out of my head when I think about this movie, whatever the hell Conor McGregor was doing.
I think this is Conor McGregor in real life.
Standpoint.
Because like this was him throwing a chair at a bus or a dolly through the window of a bus.
The dolly. You know? Yeah.
This is Conor McGregor where he can just walk around and have zero consequences. Like, I don't feel like he was acting at all other than the fact there were no police to stop him. But yeah,
was Conor McGregor in his id.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. This is his id. He was not terrifying. like he should have been. Like the guy who Patrick Swayze fought, the other martial artist bouncer that he fought, the guy whose throat he ripped out, spoilers, it's a 50-year-old movie, 40-year-old movie, so deal with it.
Yeah. You can't spoil that.
He was kind of scary.
Yeah.
Because he was quiet.
Yeah.
He didn't say a whole lot.
Yeah. And when he said
Knox
something,
never like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a guy like that and saying, you know what, I bang guys like that look like you in prison. Yeah. That's a little and hold you why he has you by the back of the neck, like that's a little bit
it's like, wait, is he gonna bang Patrick Swayze right here on screen? What's happening? Hold on a second. This is not the movie I signed up for. So
And that guy had the same similar type crazy eyes too. And I think you're when you say, yes, a guy that talks a lot can be terrifying, but I think it's more just in general, a general rule is that the one that looks crazy and doesn't say anything or say much,
the one to worry about.
For me, that's the one I'd worry about more.
Now, I'm going to say, I am a Jake Gyllenhaal stan, like, chill fanboy.
I love
whatever. Although I kept watching this movie and I'm like, is this who Homer grew up to be from October Sky? Did he like abandon NASA and become like a cage fighter? I know we're talking about two completely different times in history, but like, because he still looks the same, you know, he's still that little kid blowing up rockets in a coal mining town. I thought, so he plays UFC middleweight champion Elwood Dalton. And here's the most unbelievable part of the movie. And it happened in the first few minutes is he's going to this like underground fight and there's a guy fighting another guy and it's Post Malone kicking somebody's ass. It's like, no. This is like the Fast and Furious people requiring that they don't lose fights in their contracts. Like, there's no way those slow ass kicks and you know, potato punches were hurting anyone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know much about Post Malone. Apparently his name is Austin Post. So there's that. Like, I learned that today. Since March 21st.
I'm today seconds old since I knew that.
Well, it's in the credits. That's the only reason I know.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell you one of his songs. If I saw him on the street, I would think he was a methed out tweaker. You know, so yes, it's just
that is true.
You know, good on him for looking like that and making millions, tens of millions of dollars. Like, no hate there. Like, you know, you do the grind, you get it. But like, it was the most the most unbelievable. And we're talking, and obviously spoilers. We're talking about at the end of the movie, there's a guy who gets launched from a boat at full speed into the roof of a building and does not die. Was more believable that he didn't die than Post Malone beating someone. Not only beating someone up in a fight. Yeah, walked away. But not only beating one person in a fight, but he'd been fighting all night.
Yeah.
And he was more gassed than like CM Punk or The Rock walking from gorilla position to the ring.
So
we get an idea of like kind of what a badass this version of Dalton is, because here's this guy who's just won a bunch of fights and he sees who he's about to fight. And he's like, oh no, I'm not going to fight him. I just keep your money. I quit.
Yeah.
And so I guess this is like how this version of Dalton has been going around making money, not bouncing at other bars and like, you know, being that philosopher warrior poet, whatever. He's just a scam artist who goes around and rips people off, which is fine. It was cool. It was really interesting because as he's walking out, some guy's like, hey, Dalton, you cost me $500, and walks up and just stabs him.
Yeah.
And I love it when Dalton just kind of looks down at the knife and looks up at the guy.
He no-sold it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Total no-sell. And he's like, then he gets the guy to run off and he's like, wait, you don't want your knife back? He did these little like quips that like, you know, the original Dalton didn't do. Cause again, he was the silent assassin. Some of them right. hit the, hey, this piano is out of tune. Definitely should have been left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
So
that was awful.
Yes, pretty bad.
But you're right. There are certain things that work, like where he takes the first big fight he has mm-hmm. at the roadhouse, where he beats up five guys and he right. takes them to the hospital.
Yeah.
And at one point he's like, bump.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even that, yes. he's like, do you have insurance? Like, do you have dental? Like, do you have good insurance?
Yeah.
And that was J.D. Pardo from Mayans. From the Mayans.
Mayans,
who
yeah.
was kind of unrecognizable with the blonde hair. I was like, why do I know him? He looks yeah. familiar.
He was in, but, was that Revolution? He was in that yep, too.
Yeah.
He played, so, I think, the son or something, or yeah, younger brother or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the little kid with asthma or whatever.
Yeah.
But that, so that first fight, so that's a good thing to talk about. That first fight, like, you could tell Jake Gyllenhaal had been training. Like, you could tell he took this serious. Like, there, I find it hard to believe someone read the script and was like, you know what? I might win an Oscar for this, you know, or this movie's going to make $500 million. No, he read the script and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go get jacked. I'm going to learn how to be a cage fighter. And like, I'm just going to go all in. And I appreciate yeah. that. I respect it. He looked great. He moved great. You know, I thought the chemistry he had with the two younger bouncers that he was training was really good. The chemistry yeah. with I'm going to assume she's Cuban bartender who brought him the coffee and brought him breakfast and stuff like that. Their chemistry was really good. I don't think his chemistry with the Roadhouse owner, Kelly, was that her name? Frankie was, Jessica Williams.
Yeah, Frankie.
I didn't think that was especially great. I thought Jessica Williams was kind of out of place, in this movie. Yeah, not. You know, for any other reason that she can't really act.
Yes. And I also wasn't a fan of his love interest, Daniela Danielle. Melchior. Yeah. She was in, yeah, she played in The Suicide Squad. She was yeah. the rat catcher too.
Yeah.
I could have, she was one, it was, and again, because it's Roadhouse and it's, yeah, there were some beats yeah. that were very similar to the yeah. original. So you had to have the love interest who, you know, she's a doctor and the boars fighting and violence and all that stuff. Fine. But I would have rather had her out of there and delve more into his past because
right.
with his past, yes, we do get nice little snippets or not nice, but little snippets of what happened, but mm-hmm. we really never get how he's dealing with it other than
I think we're supposed to think on the way train tracks. Yeah. I think we're supposed to look at the way he's dealing with this situation to be how he's dealing with that. I will say, so she was also in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. She was she was the one who when they went to get the records off of like the Marshmallow Planet or whatever.
Oh, that was her.
So
yes.
And then she was yes. also in Fast X, but I have deleted that movie from my brain. I'm pretending like Fast 7 was the last one. So
I watched the first 10 minutes of it and
no, you I, have I to watch could. you I'm have sorry. to watch the whole I you not. Have to watch the whole thing because
I don't
you
want
have to because like
I know
they're shipping Alan Ritchson and Jason Momoa.
Excuse me?
You heard. Jack Reacher and Aquaman are a couple in that movie. But anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I never bought her as a doctor. By the way, like it was kind of like,
no.
I'm glad they didn't do the whole thing. Like, oh, nurse, you know, like that was a nice little, mm-hmm. Thing. The other kind of great, like tertiary character, I think at most, was Mo,
dude,
from the biker gang at the beginning.
Dude, I loved him.
Mo was awesome.
He was awesome. I really, and again, when you were talking about you're writing for this script and yeah. thinking it's going to win an Oscar, and again, as an actor, and I think too many people fall into this category of it has to be a world beater. It has to be a great movie that either the critics love or the audience loves and, you know, spends a lot of money on. But you know what? sometimes you just want to have fun, like you say, have an excuse to get jacked, learn how to fight, or not even learn how, because he was in Southpaw and he he
Dude,
did all that.
I love Southpaw. I think Southpaw is probably one of the most underrated boxing movies out there.
I did like Southpaw.
Okay, so let's talk about the bad guy, Brad or Brandt. Sorry, I always want to call him Brad. It's Ben Brandt. Played by Joe Burrow. No, played by Billy Magnussen, who for the longest time I was like, why is Eric Johnson or Eric Johnson, right? No, that's not the same. From Smallville, who played Whitney? Yeah, Eric Johnson. Why is Eric Johnson the bad guy in this movie, and why does he still look so young? is what I was thinking. He was an interesting villain, right? Like, he wasn't really a bad guy by choice. He was a bad guy because his dad went to prison and he took over.
Yeah.
He was just an asshole.
Absolutely. Although, I guess you would say he becomes a bad guy when he's trying to burn
people's... He does. He becomes the bad guy. But like when it starts, he really just wants to buy this property so he can make a land development. Like, there's nothing inherently evil about that. It's just like the way he goes about it.
No,
like,
that's not.
You know, I will say the other thing I really didn't like about this movie was Joaquin de Almeida as Big Dick.
Another like
completely unnecessary character. Like, you can have this whole movie without him, and it's not a big deal. But yeah, all right. So I thought the fight choreography was really good.
I just thought it was okay. There were spots where it was really good, and it was like one of those where there were spots where it's like, oh, and that's very creative how the camera moved there. And then there were other times where it seemed a little stilted. So I have a mixed bag. For me, it was a mixed bag. It wasn't bad.
I think the worst fight choreography was the last fight. The last fight was the bad one.
Yes. So. And maybe that might be because that one sticks with me because, like you said, it's the last one. So I'm remembering more of that one. But I like the fight with the kind of fun fight with him and the bikers in the first part of the movie. Or there were some good fights inside the roadhouse too. That were pretty solid. So I think you're right with it, that big fight being a disappointment that it was, that sticks with me more than some of the other ones.
Yeah.
So,
I was this morning years old when I rewatched it and realized there was a mid credit scene.
What was that one?
When, Knox leaves the hospital because he's not dead.
Okay, I did not even know that.
Yeah. So I was just happy
that might have been the scene that I missed.
So, okay. So we were talking about this. So this morning was the third time I watched this movie because I watched it the first night. And, well, actually, I watched like 3/4 of it and then watched it again with Haley and Jen. And then this was part 3. And there's this scene where he goes looking for Brandt and he finds one of the henchmen. And this is after Charlie and Steven's, Charlie's the girl, Steven is the dad, after their bookstore gets burned down and he finds out they're in the hospital and he kills the dude. And for whatever reason, this was the first time that scene even registered with me. Like, I didn't fall asleep watching it any of the times, but whatever. But so this is where we got the glowing difference between the two Daltons, because 1984 Dalton was not a fight. Like, he fought, he could fight, right? Mm-hmm. But he always looked for the way out to not fight. This version of Dalton is the definition of a fighter. And if he's not going to fight, he's going to help the people who need to do the fight, do the fighting safely. But he is not, he's not ever trying to back down from a fight. He's afraid to fight because he killed his friend in the UFC octagon.
Yeah. Right.
But he is not ever precluding from fighting. Like, if he had to fight Post Malone at the beginning of the movie, he would have kicked the shit out of Post Malone at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
At no point does he, like not want to fight Knox, you know? But anyway. All right. So some production things. So Doug Liman directed Edge of Tomorrow, Swingers, a whole bunch of great shit. Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Let's see. American Made, the Tom Cruise one, Jumper, The Bourne Identity, Go. He directed this movie, and he was really mad that this movie was direct to Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Roadhouse had about a $60 million budget. If this movie would have gone to the theaters, it would have been a $60 million budget, probably another $60 million of marketing, maybe more.
Yeah.
This movie would have lost money in the movie theater.
100%.
This movie would have opened to like $3 million in its first weekend.
Yeah. It's not even a question. It would have lost money. Like, not even a question.
But it being on Amazon, it's something you can watch three times in 2 weeks and, like, you know, like, not be upset about it. So, all right.
Because, honestly, look, I would not have gone to see this at theaters.
No. I probably would have.
Especially with some of the other movies.
Well, that is true. With all the other movies coming out, like, it would have been on the, like, short list of, like, maybe I'll see it. I probably won't because I'll wait for it for streaming.
Yeah.
But I might have just, like, gone on, like, a random, like, Tuesday night. Anyway. All right. So, out of 10, I really missed all the throats being ripped outs. What do you give this one?
I give it a 4. It's just, I really like Jake Gyllenhaal. Like you said, I like Mo. Mm-hmm. Fighting was hit and miss, particularly because of the end fight was just poor.
Yeah.
But it is, and again, even if I'm giving it a 4, this sounds weird. I am not crossing out watching this again. It's not one. So there are movies that I can say I would give a better rating than this that I would never watch again.
Sure.
But this is one. I don't know why.
Oppenheimer a better rating than this. And you would watch this again before you would watch Oppenheimer again.
Yes.
So
100%.
There. Yeah. I was a little more like, I don't hate this movie. I will definitely watch this movie again. Just like I watched the regular Roadhouse. You know, not on repeat, but a lot. I give it a 5.5.
Yeah.
So I think it's a better than average movie. As far as the kind of overall, like looking at the sum of the parts as the whole, it's not awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to watch.
No. It's bad. I will say it's bad, but it's not awful.
And I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was really good in the role.
Dude, Jake Gyllenhaal and Mo, dude, they
stole the show.
FTW for the win. Yeah.
I will say the UFC.
These guys aren't really nice.
Yeah, right. They're not nice. Yeah. This isn't real. I live in South Florida, and it's really hard to motorcycle alone. You have to be in a group.
Yeah.
So, but all right, let's move on to Shogun, episodes 5 and 6. So, where were we? All right. Episode 5 is called The Broken Fist, and episode 6 is called The Ladies of the Willow World. So Black, I always want to call him Blackstone, but Blackthorn had a pretty interesting couple of episodes here. I want to break them down individually though, because like, I really want to focus on a couple things from each episode.
Okay.
So, Broken to the Fist, it's broken, not broke in, like broken, you broke it. Marioko's husband has returned from the dead. And not in a zombie, like,
yeah,
Easter Jesus way. But like, he wasn't actually killed. When Toranaga rolls up with his whole army, which was a cool scene with all of the ground shaking and everything like that. Especially because of the, what's it called? The earthquake that happened a couple episodes ago, just the light earthquake. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
But watching her and Blackthorn's reaction to that was really interesting. And then I am forgetting the name of Blackthorn's concubine or, whatever she's called. You know what I'm talking about? His little assistant there.
Yes.
Courtesan. His courtesan.
Fuji.
Yeah. So yeah. Was it Fuji?
Yeah.
So yeah. So the three of them had a very definite reaction to this. Because Blackthorn was just starting to feel like a part of the village, right? Like it's like mm-hmm. people there were liking him. They thought he was a little weird. One of the things I found really interesting in this episode, though, is they like to call him the barbarian, right? Whereas Marioka's husband, beat her within minutes of like being back.
Yeah.
And Blackthorn's like, what the fuck? You know, like you call me a savage, you call me a brute, like, but I haven't like actually hurt anyone. I just want to get back to my war. You know, I thought it was just this funny thing. It's like, you know, because the Japanese at this time in feudal Japan are so proper and so process oriented with their routines and ceremonies, right? They're looking at him as something that he's really not, and they're presenting to be something that they're really not.
Well, and again, I said this when we first started talking about this, my fascination with how when two cultures that are so, so different get together. And that's why I love the fact that watching this in its intended format with Japanese and mm-hmm. then you have the English for Blackthorn, just it kind of helps with that distance between characters. Yeah. But I find it, that what you're talking about with the barbarian thing, because it's so funny because they'll talk to him like that and then he'll do something like leave the pheasant out for a week or whatever. And, you know, as the flies just continually like love mopping up the pheasant and everybody's going by like, oh my God, this stinks.
Right.
But then you have, like you said, someone like Buntaro who, again, in this culture, the wife, and I believe they say it at one point where it might actually be Torunaga that says it's like, you know, it's your wife, you can do as you will, right, or something along those lines. But the fact that you disturbed the sanctity of Blackthorn's domicile,
right? It was so weird.
Was very offensive. It's just so fascinating to see little things like that happen in this show, which again, this is a real life type thing where, you know, throughout history where cultures clash and you think what you're doing is so prim and proper while the other person's the barbarian and then vice versa too.
Right.
So I this is one of my favorite things about the show is, and you know, with Mariko, she is looked down upon because of what her father did.
Right.
Not her.
Right.
She didn't do anything. Her father did.
And we'll learn more about that. Like we learn about like what her father did here, but we'll learn more about like what her true mission is in the next episode, which we'll get to. I did like between Buntaro and Blackthorn, the dick measuring contest with the sake.
That was great.
He was like, this is a small cup. These are for women. And then which Makara didn't how do you say her name? Mariko, sorry. She didn't she did not translate what he said properly.
Oh yeah.
It was like Alan,
how she edits sometimes.
Yeah, it was like Alan editing what Mark said to the immortal. He thinks your beard's stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's missing exactly all the good parts up here. Yeah. but that was a really good scene. And then like when Buntaro and him had their confrontation in the street was really interesting. I also thought it was interesting that Fuji was like, you can kill me for disobeying your order with the pheasant. And it's like, he's like, I'm not going to kill you for, you know, taking letting someone else do something wrong. All right.
And the fact that she actually, but, and again, going back to the culture thing, because he disobeyed, and this is, again, when we talk about words, because there's a boundary between them, and he and Blackthorn doesn't know the right words. What he says when he says, "Don't touch the pheasant," and he says, "Touch it, die."
Yeah.
They took that as a literal statement. Right. And then the gardener, who's the nice, and again, apparently he was dying anyway. Right. So he was the one that took charge and said, "I'll remove it, and then you can kill me for disobeying." That's, that again goes to how different.
Yeah.
This culture is from what, and Blackthorn's face when he's like, "You killed him for that?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?"
He was like, "I just want it left alone because it has to age. Like, you know, this is how we eat it in England." All right. So the other big thing in this episode is the full-on earthquake, which was crazy. And it shows the hubris of Toranaga, standing out on the cliff there, hand on the hilt of his sword, essentially like yelling at clouds, but not like, not really yelling at clouds, but like, you know, no worry about like, "Oh, I need to move to safety." And then the ground just disintegrates underneath him.
Yeah. That was fascinating to watch.
It was really interesting. And then the way Blackthorn again, just hopped into action where like, he was like, "Oh, I have to save this guy." And you know, he gets down, he finds him, he, you know, pulls him from, you know, the earth, and further cements the bond that the two of them have, even though Toranaga won't let Blackthorn leave and go back to, you know, fight the Portuguese like he believes he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And again, you know, when you know, the town, where is it? Ajiro?
Yeah.
And Blackthorn goes back. Fuji is injured, and there's a nice little scene where, you know, her back is injured, or you know, they had somebody cleaning it up. But he just like grabs her hand for a moment and like squeezes or touches her hand, as you know, it was a very cool moment, especially after what happened previously with the gardener.
Yeah,
you know, him reaching out and like, it's so interesting to watch their bond or their relationship, despite not being able to really communicate from a verbal standpoint, and how it continues to develop over the, you know, these last few episodes, where at first she was, you know, like this barbarian and all this and that, and you can see there's some type of respect. There's definitely some type of respect, and you can see there's been a change in the way she approaches and the way she looks at him. Not necessarily in a romantic way, but just in a way of when you get to know someone and they're not, okay, they might be, you know, barbarian, but not as barbarian as you thought they were.
Like, I mean, I think you're a barbarian, but not as much of a barbarian as I think you really are.
Yes, right. So I like those type of moments, and they're little moments, and that's one of the things I love about this show. It's not just the big moments, the earthquake or seeing what a cannonball does to samurai. It's the little moments like that where he comes back and sees her injured and just touches her hand to let her know that he's there for her.
Yeah, cool. All right, so out of five, a dead husband's untimely returns, what do you give this episode?
I have 4.25.
Hey, me too. Same exact score. Very interesting. I thought it was good. I really like this. I almost think 4.25 might be, I think 4.5 is probably the cap on any of these episodes. We'll see what happens as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. All right. So let's move on to episode 6. Or chapter 6, if you will. Ladies of the Willow World. So we get a flashback about Mariko and what happened with her and her father, and, you know, seeing more of that. We come back to 1600, so just 2 years later, or I'm sorry, 12 years later. And there's a funeral for the people who had the earthquakes. Toranaga promotes Blackthorn to be the chief admiral and general of his cannon regiment, which is just like, he keeps asking you to leave and you keep like putting him in charge of things.
Yeah. It's like, what's going on? I'm getting more responsibility.
Yeah. Toranaga reprimands Buntaro for what happened with Mariko the, you know, before, and orders him to stay away from her for 1 week. Oh, I forgot. Mariko tells Blackthorn that they can't be together anymore. They can't even really be friends. They're like, she has to spend time with him because she's the translator, but any words that they share will be words for other people, which I thought was a really like powerful moment.
Yeah. And that, oh, that's where you're, that was one of the things that happened, after he found her, yeah. You know, a little bit after Buntaro beats her.
Right.
And he's trying to reach out to her, but at the same time, it was one of those moments, like, probably if you were going to do that, that's one of those where you have to read the situation, mm-hmm. and their relationship, you know, that they've consummated the couple episodes back. It's understandable why he would do that, because mm-hmm. again, this isn't just a translator translatee relationship. You know,
no, they're in love or rub,
and rub. They're in rub, bruv.
They're in, well, you know, they're in rub,
bruv.
Never mind. So the funny thing is Toranaga picks up on the like tension that they have, and he thinks it's absolutely. Because they don't like each other, or that Blackthorn might be stressed out. So he orders Mariko to take him to see a courtesan, or a hooker, if you will. Yeah. And so she brings him to a brothel, and you know, they have like kind of the setting of terms and everything, and as he leaves to go back with the courtesan, like they have a moment where they like kind of just like pinky swear, like almost, you know, just kind of rub hands. And I thought that was a really powerful moment, because neither one of them wanted him to be doing what he was about to do. The other interesting thing is the courtesan is the lover courtesan of the nephew of the general whose village they're in. I cannot remember his name.
And I was trying to look for his name. Yeah.
And like, she knew that, you know, she was gonna have to do that. And she told dude, and he was like all pissy with her and, you know, didn't want to talk to her anymore. But it so I don't know. I found this scene like really, really interesting. The drinking of the tea and all of that stuff. And again, all the ceremony that they stand on, you know, and again, Mariko does not translate his words correctly when she asks about hookers or courtesans back in London. And he's like, oh, you're much more beautiful than any of them. And she was like, yeah, you're just okay. She's like, you,
because again,
are passable.
Yeah, well, again, one of the things that Toranaga says, and then Mariko's face when he says it, is you should be in the room when he does the pillowing,
right?
Because he might talk.
Yeah,
and her face,
yeah,
you know, that says it all of how she feels about Blackthorn.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't something about modesty or anything like that. It was, oh, he wants me to watch this guy and this woman, and I can't because my feelings are involved, like my emotions. You could see that on her face.
So the term is cuckweening. So, you know, she was, he wanted to cuck her, and he didn't, Toranaga had no idea he was going to make her a cuckween. So
Yabushiga, that's the guy Yabushiga, who runs the village.
Right. Okay, so we go through all of this like rigmarole with the courtesan. And the real undertone here is Crimson Sky. And I love the fact that they just got cannons, and their main form of combat is sword and arrow. And there is a master plan called Crimson Sky. It's like my most favorite thing ever, because you think Crimson Sky is something where you're dropping bombs on people. And we'll get to that with the next thing we talk about. But but yeah, it was just like, so Toranaga has this plan that if the shit hits the fan, worst comes to worst, he will, you know, because he's going to be impeached from his role as a regent, he will essentially unleash hell and take the position of the shogun. but he does not want to be the
which
shogun.
Which he doesn't want. Yeah.
Which is why he's probably pretty much the shogun. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Like with Maximus. Mm-hmm. With all my heart, no.
Yeah.
That's why it must be you. But I look at Crimson Sky because they said like one just, you know, rush of Osaka Castle, and I couldn't help but think of that Leroy Jenkins from back in the day.
Leroy Jenkins.
Jenkins.
Yeah. So so then like with the larger war council at the end, you know, it's like he talks about why they need to do Crimson Sky and why he's invoking it. And then, you know, they he has a plan to kind of protect what's his name? The guy whose village they're in?
Oh, Yabushiga.
Yabushiga. Like to kind of protect like that village from future bloodshed. Like and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. Plus Yeichio? I forget who Yeichio is. But anyway. But yeah, so I don't know. This was an interesting episode as well. It did not go quite as fast as the previous episode because I did watch them back to back. It was still pretty good, you know, or it was still really good. Let me rephrase that. But I of the two episodes we're talking about, I definitely enjoyed episode 5 more than episode 6, even though episode 6 had a ton of just like really cool story movement happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, all right. Yeah, I would give.
Oh. Yeah, I was gonna say. So out of 5, Crimson Sky has arrived. What do you give?
I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Cool. Yeah, I went 4.15. I mean, I still think this show is real. Like it's like pizza, right? Like it's pizza. There's bad pizza, but you're still eating pizza and you enjoy it. You know.
That's pretty accurate. So, yeah, and I have a feeling especially if it keeps going the way it is. I think this is going to be one of those parts where those instances where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely. 100%.
Even though the sum of its parts are really good, yep. I think the whole after you're done, like, as long as it does fall off a cliff, which it's not.
When we get to chapter 10, A Dream of a Dream, we are going to be looking at it and we're going to say, okay, out of 10 for this series, what do we give it? You know, and so
yeah, cool. Absolutely.
All right. You ready to head to World War II Germany?
Yes.
All right. Masters of the Air. So if you don't have Apple TV, there's an Apple TV app. Do the free trial if there's a free trial. Pay for a month, whatever you have to do. Watch this show. If you liked Band of Brothers, if you like The Pacific, it's right in the it's in that whole universe of life and war and everything. It's the same people doing the show. Masters of the Air is an excellent miniseries.
Yes.
So just real quick, the summary is a World War II drama that follows the story of the 100th Bomb Group of the United States 8th Air Force in 1943. The series depicts the harrowing experiences of these young American airmen as they take on the dangerous task of bombing targets in Nazi Germany, facing constant threats from anti-aircraft and enemy fighters. The show explores the emotional toll of combat, portraying the varying fates of these heroes. Some were captured, wounded, or killed, while others made it home, all paying a heavy price for their fight against Hitler's Third Reich. So just kind of real quick, there's a documentary that goes along with this called The Bloody 100th. I have not watched it yet. It's on my to-watch list. I kind of wanted to talk about this before I watched it, just so I didn't kind of muddy reality with the dramatization of it all. So this stars Austin Butler as Major Gale Buck Cleven, Callum Turner as Major John Bucky Egan, Anthony Boyle as Harry Crosby, who he's also in another Amazon show right now called Manhunt, where he plays, I was going to say Lee Harvey Oswald, but that's not right. John Wilkes Booth, who killed Lincoln.
Oh, that's it. He plays in
it? Yep, he's, okay. He's John Wilkes Booth. Barry Keoghan, who plays Curtis Babdick. And then kind of the list goes on for there. Sawyer Spielberg, who is Steven Spielberg's son, plays Lieutenant Roy Frank Claytor. I think that was kind of an interesting one to know. But yeah, so this is a this show is fantastic. I've kind of let my fandom of Austin Butler kind of like be well known here. I think he's fantastic in this show. He is he's really good. I do think though Callum Turner is a scene stealer for sure as Buck. You might remember him. He plays Theseus Scamander, Newt's older brother in the Fantastic Beasts movies. If you're not familiar with him. But he was excellent. And then the guy that played... Oh, where did he go? Oh, Nate Mann, who plays Major Robert Rosie Rosenthal, is the other like really, really just great character. And he was in... He's been in like very few things. So totally just kind of out of nowhere actor. He's done some Broadway, things like that, but really, really good Nate Mann in this show as well.
Yeah, I know you have a major great fascination with World War II, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I mean, the Revolutionary War and World War II are the ones I like to like study the most, or like read about the most. I guess study would be a strong word because I'm not like trying to be a historian or anything like that. But just because I find both wars are very interesting for very different reasons.
So I have always been a fan of war movies, like always, and it's. I know a lot of people say, well, the action and the violence. No, it's because I remember, long time ago, I believe it was Black Hawk Down. And I was, this is how long ago that came out. So my dad at the time, he was talking about how he thought that, these movies, some of these movies, not necessarily all of them, but he just a generalization that they glorify, violence and stuff like that. Or I don't remember how the conversation started, but I was like, no, that's not why I watch these things. I look at it for the brotherhood and the bonds, like a sports team.
Yeah. Like you a band a of brothers, with, if you will. And it,
yes. Exactly. And watching this was a reminder of why I love these type of shows. Yes, the action and the with the fighting, there's such tension and just in and of itself. So like, who's gonna live? Who's gonna die? What's gonna happen? Okay, this is a quiet moment. Somebody's gonna get hit with blasted with something, right. But that's not it. It's watching Buck and Bucky, or Bucky's reaction when Buck doesn't come back,
right?
And he thinks he's dead. And it's watching Crosby grow from a guy that can't even keep his lunch down as a navigator in the plane to this commanding officer who's planning this huge, massive offensive and, going 3 days without sleep. And watching these guys when their friends die or they think their friends die, and then the happiness and the moments they share when at the end, and I sent you that line from Crosby, who narrating about it, and that's why it's just that the camaraderie about fighting with someone else, regardless of if it's legit fighting as far as war, or you're with someone else and you all have the same goal. Your backgrounds could be night and day, and we see that especially in Chapter 8 when you see the Tuskegee Airmen finally come in. You have these different backgrounds, but you're fighting for the same ideal, for the same goal. And this is the reason why these, like the well-done war movies like Saving Private Ryan, like you were mentioning, The Band of Brothers, I never watched the Pacific, so I can't say that, but We Were Soldiers, Black Hawk Down, this is why I love these type of movies, because of what it, because these all these movies do a good job of showing the truth about yes, you have this goal, but again, you talk to these guys and they're not necessarily, they're not, yes, they're fighting for their country, but more than that, they're fighting for the guy next to them.
Right.
And well, that's what any type of team is.
And so
is fighting for the person next to you.
To like kind of build on that point, right? So this one is a little different than Band of Brothers, than the mm-hmm. Pacific. So it's closer to Band of Brothers because these guys have trained together for a long time. For the most part, they came over as units and, you know, were brought over kind of in waves because basically what they wanted to have people do was fly a couple missions, bring a new group in, fly a couple missions, you know, just kind of through that. So the interesting thing here is that they were supposed to, the way it worked is you get to 25 missions and you go home because who survives 25 missions? Almost nobody. And it gets to a point where these guys are so tight knit that Rosie gets to his 25th mission, his crew, and they're all going home. And he finds out like, hey, after this, they're raising it from 25 to 30 because they can't afford to be sending people home. So he re-ups.
Right.
Immediately. He's like, I'm not going home. I'm not doing this to my guys. He is like the leader that they all needed to have. And that right there, that kind of camaraderie, because one of the most interesting things about the bombing groups from the United States is it wasn't until late in the war that they started to have fighter escorts. They would just be on their own, kind of, you know, using their turrets, their belly, the, you know, dorsal and the, you know, fore and aft, to, you know, try and stop these much more agile, better armed, faster, fighter jets. But the Americans did all of their bombing during the day because they wanted to mitigate collateral damage, because what they were doing is they had so all these planes had a scope. And it's a very sophisticated piece of American technology. It was created for the time that essentially what would happen is the bombardier would get control of the plane and line up, you know, so there was no communication that had to go back and forth. As he worked with the scope, it would adjust the trajectory of the plane and then, you know, drop the bombs. And you see a lot in the show as like planes get damaged and they're going down, they shoot it and then they drop it, especially into the water, because they didn't want this to fall into enemy hands to be reverse engineered or just, you know, stolen and copied. And so these men were left to go on these flights where they would send out 30, 40, 50 bombers and 3, 10, 13, maybe 15 would come back. And they just, the survivors had this just unbreakable bond with each other. So like when Rosie like re-upped, it was like, okay, he gave what they all needed, some actual like hope and leadership and things like that. The other thing, the only thing I'm disappointed in this show about is that we didn't get enough of the Tuskegee, because the Tuskegee Airmen with their P-51 Mustangs were a super elite piloting group. Because they were kept apart and because they were training back in Tuskegee, Alabama, these guys became top gun fighter pilots. And the P-51 Mustang at the time was one of the greatest, you know, fighter planes ever made. If you watch Top Gun Maverick,
absolute game changer.
Yes. If you watch Top Gun Maverick, at the end when Maverick and Penny Marshall fly off, that is the plane that he's in. And that is the one that Tom Cruise actually owns.
I was about to say, I believe, that's Tom Cruise.
That's his own P-51 Mustang. So I would have loved for them to have brought the Tuskegee in sooner, because we essentially got an episode with the Tuskegee and then concentration camps.
Finale.
You know, yes. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, cause a bunch of them got caught immediately in that episode, and it did not do justice, in my opinion, to who these men are and it did not.
What they did
for the war effort, the sacrifices that they made. If you go back and you look, I mean, the majority, like vast majority, like over 80% of these guys went on to get like prestigious degrees, go into inner cities, mm-hmm. really help with their communities and things like that. These guys are the best of the best that the Air Force has ever put out, regardless of color. And
yeah,
I was like, because I told you, it's like, oh, I think they're going to make the Tuskegee in. And then I realized there was only one episode left. And I was like, motherfucker. But it was a disappointment. It was really late in the war. And so when you looked at like the other allied groups, so Britain did all their bombing at night. So they did not have the same kind of casualties, the same kind of losses to their air force that we did. But at the same time, they were indiscriminate about how they bombed, which is what made our guys so good and so, like, you know, effective at what they were doing. But at the cost, just, it was, you know, you would hear, they'd be like, that's another 115 men down, right? That's 17.
Oh man,
that's 17 aircraft, you know. And it's just like, and even the ones who got back, I mean, you had, you know, I mean, the people in the turrets, the pilots, I mean, those planes are not bulletproof. I really enjoyed the depiction of the dangers that they all faced. My only real gripe is the lack of the Tuskegee, and they kind of jetpacked through the POWs and kind of what they saw of the Holocaust. I kind of wish this would have been a 13 episode season or series. Sorry,
yeah,
just to get more of that, because there's no filler in this show.
I was about to say, and again, we're not the ones that we're usually like, hey, this could be cut down a little bit.
Let's cut that to
it's
six.
Rare for, yeah. I was thinking that when you were just talking, like, oh man, if this was a couple more episodes, this would have been great. I mean, it would have been great for us in the sense of what we wanted to see. This is a fantastic show as it is. I mean, just absolutely phenomenal. It's going to be winning some awards. It damn well better be on that list. That's how good it is.
Here's the problem: is who do you nominate from the actors in this show?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think Callum Turner as Bucky, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think Nate Mann for sure. Probably Anthony Boyle, and then like Austin Butler is huge in this show, even though he misses three episodes from when you think he's dead. But yeah, it's just, you know, I mean, Austin Butler and Callum Turner are up for best actor, and Anthony Boyle and Nate Mann are supporting actors. I mean, who even knows? So,
yeah, it's tough to, and I was thinking as watching this, and you mentioned Rosie and how, yeah, Rosie comes in, I believe, right after Buck goes down or somewhere
right
around
after
there.
Buck goes, really right close. The flight where Buck goes missing is when Rosie comes in. And then he has to fly three missions over the next 3 days, which is unheard of.
And then, yes. And his, like, just the shock of saying, like, I didn't know it was going to be mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And then the episode where they say, okay, you guys, you're going to have to go away for, you know, a week or so for some R&R. And him, you know, getting upset about it because he's like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to go back there that mm-hmm. now that I've lost that rhythm or see the peace.
Well, he didn't get R&R. He had to go talk to a psychiatrist because he refused to turn back on a plane with one engine. And they're like, what's going on here? Are you capable of doing this? And they did the best that they could to keep his edge, but to blunt it a little bit so that he wasn't going to snap.
Well, and again, when he comes back from that, he has for a split second, he has a little trouble getting back into the plane.
Yep.
And it's almost, it reminded me of when you hear when the trauma of something where, like, if you drop, fall off your horse, you need to get right back on, or the longer you wait for to get back on, it's the harder it's going to be. And I really like that moment. And again, that moment was maybe 30 seconds where he's about to get in, which, by the way, the way they got in the planes, I mean, the
Oh,
different body type
for
back
the
then.
pilots? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's because they didn't have the shit in their food that we have now.
Exactly.
Anyway,
Exactly. Yes.
that's a different
But
podcast that is not having anything to do with pop culture. So,
I just found that was when I saw them get into the planes, that was my first thought. It's like, oh, wow, that's, you have to be athletic to do that,
oh
or
yeah.
some semblance of athleticism.
Yep, so.
But I just loved, I really, really enjoyed this show. Like you said, there is no filler in here.
None.
Every moment they use to do something with, where, what is his name? The guy that played the master mechanic, the really young guy,
Oh yeah,
who
for
in the last episode, actually, when they do the, the food run
yeah,
for, I
he
think,
goes
the
up.
Dutch,
Yeah.
he's like, I've never been in one of these. It's like, I took a boat here or something like that.
He'd
So,
never flown
but
ever.
yeah. So watching him, throughout the series, to some of the stuff he does to help get these planes in
Yeah, oh
order,
yeah.
and those two, the two British kids, the one
Yep.
with, who had lost an arm that he works with, and every moment where he shows them, okay, here's how you get rid of the oil that's on, that's on the landing strip, landing pad, or whatever, or the strip.
Yeah,
Each
you guys
every
wanna light a
moment is,
fire?
yeah. I was like, oh man, this is, but it's one of those where every moment something happens, but not in a way where it's overwhelming, because they know how to do, they do such a great job of the ebbs and flows of what's going on. You have moments of these guys, apart, or you have when Crosby, he goes on leave, or when they have them, him, when he meets the British woman, what is her name,
Oh, shoot, what was her
that
name?
he ends up, what is
That he
it?
has an affair with.
Yeah.
Was it? Oh, where is she? There's so much that's happening in the show that it's like so hard to.
And I and or when you see Buck, that's where you, if you're looking for it, like when Bucky, he actually has his leave, and then he go and he's in the town he's at, he sees where they actually got bombed, and pulling people out of the wreckage, which that juxtaposes later on when he's a captive, and he and six other guys are being walked through this town that got bombed, and then the mob rules happens, and five of the six guys get killed by the townsfolk. And a couple by the, the German officers who just, let, I mean, it's just one of those things. It just hits everything for me, in the sense of, even, again, I, like I said, I enjoy the reading about and watching documentaries on World War II. Not necessarily as much as I like, ancient Rome or ancient Greece, but I still love it. And this was such a well done show. As you said to start, when we were first start talking about it, get a week's or a month subscription of Apple TV just to watch this. I mean, there's some other good stuff on Apple TV, but this right now, I would say, get that subscription just to watch this, and then you can cancel, because that's how good I think the show is.
Yes, sir. All right, so out of 10 real American heroes, what do you give this?
I gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
Nice.
It's, again, this is something I will, down the road, probably next year, or maybe later in this year, I will absolutely rewatch this again.
I'm curious as to what the
Like,
next
no
one's gonna
doubt.
be. Probably about the Navy, but all right. So I went 8.25 out of 10. I love this show. I think it's great. I like so for me, it goes Pacific, the Pacific, Band of Brothers, this one kind of in order, and this has nothing to do with the quality of any of those. This is not like worse than the other ones. Just what the guys went through in the Pacific Theater versus, like, I mean, it was all bad, don't get me wrong, but like the Japanese were especially brutal. So
I might have to watch the Pacific.
it's so good. It's
I'm
so
after
good. It's
watching
like
this,
six or it's like 6 or 8 episodes. Like
oh, that's it.
I
Okay.
hold on, I can tell you, I have it right here. It's 11 episodes.
Okay. Oh yeah, and I've read a lot about like the Japanese and the stuff they did back then is, I mean, it's, yeah.
So another good one about the Pacific like kind of theater is it's a movie. It's called Unbroken, or Unbreakable, something like that. About a guy who ends up in the POW camp.
Oh yes, yes, I know that.
But yeah. The book, like, it's Unbroken. Yeah, the movie was directed by Angelina Jolie. It's about
Rami Malek was in the Pacific.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So is John Barenthal.
Oh wow.
So it's about Louis Zampier. The Unbroken. It's really good, and it stars Jack O'Connell plays him. So.
I'm definitely gonna check it out.
Yeah, the Pacific is awesome. It's a completely different pace from all of these. So, but yeah, all right. Well, I think that's good. We've been going for over an hour. So, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week. I think we're gonna try and do Animation Tuesday. We're gonna talk about the most recent episodes of Invincible, which I still have to watch, and X-Men 97, which was great.
Which
episode 3
was great. I think I'm going to rewatch that one.
I made Haley watch
it. I'm going to rewatch that one.
I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it. I'm definitely going to watch it for a third time because it drops so many hints. If we get Inferno, oh my God. If we get Inferno, I'm going to go find where Bo lives. And be like, hey, dude, you're awesome. Here's some pizza. Let's be friends. You know. But yeah, I'm just gonna track down Bo DeMeo and be like, look, man, we're good. We did a podcast where we called it Woke on Woke Crime. Sorry about that. You got fired for being too good at your job because this is not indicative of the Disney way. So,
yeah, it is absolutely an anomaly as what they're doing right now. Absolutely an anomaly.
Correct. Anyway. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. We will be back in a couple days. See ya. The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on Apple Podcast, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcast, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Daryl Jasper and me, Brian Tudor. To find more information about the show, visit us at infamouspodcast.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to keep up with the show. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons and are looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. Music for this podcast is provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.